Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the dawn of America of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules. And at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. And after tonight, no more Winter of Weirdness. Welcome to the finale of the Winter of Weirdness. As I said at the beginning of last week's episode, look, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a weatherman. So as I was putting together last week's graphic, I thought to myself, hey, when does the winter end? And then I realized that it ends this coming Sunday. So, you know, legally, this has to be the last episode of the Winter of Weirdness. Nobody wants a Winter of Weirdness episode, you know, once the spring starts. So this is the end of the Winter of Weirdness. I guess we'll reflect a little bit on it afterwards at the end of the show. And I'll give you – I have no real plans for what's next, so but maybe I'll muse about it at the end of the at the end of the program. But we're going out tonight. The Wow is going out with a bang because we got a great guest on the program tonight. First-time guest on the show, good friend of mine, somebody I've had the pleasure of hanging out with on multiple occasions here in Massachusetts, and we've gone on some adventures. We've explored, we'll get into it later, America's Stonehenge and the Exeter Festival and stuff like that. So he's a Massachusetts guy. I won't call him a masshole. Actually, he is a sweetheart. I will say that. Matt Hopewell is the guest. You may know him as AP Strange. He's very prolific online, especially on Twitter. He's a force to be reckoned with on weird Twitter. And he's just a really cool guy. And like I said, he's sort of like – I'm sort of like the curmudgeonly dude. And Matt is a total sweetheart and one of the nicest guys I've met. So we make a good pairing when we're exploring some of these places. And I'm excited to get him on the program finally. So welcome to the show, Matt, AP Strange. It's great to have you, brother.
Hey, Tim, it's an honor to be here, and an honor to be closing out a great Winter of Weirdness. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure, man, my pleasure. It's long overdue, and you were on the list here for folks I wanted to get on, but all of America here for the Winter of Weirdness. So I have had, like I said, the pleasure of hanging out with you. I've gotten to know you personally and everything. But for the folks who – and it's funny because I remember we first hung out like when you kind of just started, really, started kind of. I always sort of liken it to like there's folks who they follow this stuff, and there's sort of folks who want to kind of be in it. You know what I mean? And you were like, I'm going to start doing stuff, and I'm like, go for it, man. You know? And then we kind of hung out right around when you first were starting to do stuff. So what's the bio, the background? You know, who is Matt Hopewell? How did the AP Strange name come about? You know, give us the origin story of AP Strange and how you got mixed up in the world of weird.
Okay, sure. Well, I've had a lot of my own personal paranormal experiences throughout my life, and have always had interest in it. So it's kind of always difficult for me to figure out where it really began. Probably began with talking to a pair of luminous entities at the end of my bed when I was very little. just kind of reading about ghosts in the old Reader's Digest and Time Life books that my mom would buy. And that led me down the path towards, like, cryptozoology, because, like all kids, I was a big dinosaur, big fan of dinosaurs, so the Loch Ness Monster and Machelium Bembe were, like, fascinating to me. And then, of course, UFOs, because that's going to get mixed into everything. Although at the time I was coming up with it, you know, being more of like late 80s, early 90s, it was kind of everything was all Roswell, that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
It was less interesting to me than the other subjects. And I kind of, when I discovered more of the old contactee era and stuff, that's when it got really interesting for me and digging into the real history of it. So, I mean, I've been kind of an armchair fan and enthusiast and researcher my entire life. But in the last couple of years, I always say the last couple, now it's getting to be more like 5 or 6, but I've taken it more seriously. And as for the name, when I got online, I just wanted an anonymous name so that I could post about the stuff. And I was using Twitter as kind of a writing exercise, because I figured if I could pare down my writing and be succinct, that would be the best way to go. So a character limit on Twitter was like a training tool for me writing-wise. And the name was just, I tried to come up with the most kind of out there pretentious thing I could. And so that ended up being Aficionado Prodigiosus, which I can't even really pronounce right the first time. So Aficionado Prodigiosus, Purveyor of the Strange, which later just got truncated to AP Strange.
There you go. All right. Yeah. I remember, because you were kind of still kicking around the name when I first met you. So it was like, that must have been kind of when you first were getting into this and stuff as far as doing things. So it's good. It's good to see you. Did you say you had an encounter with entities at the end of your bed?
Yeah, that was when I was really small. I have a hard time figuring out what age I was at the time. Because for a long time in my life, I always thought I was about 4 or 5, or maybe even a little older, because I had a bunk bed with my brother, and I was up on the top. And I figured he must have been at least, like, 2 or something to be in a bed and not a crib, right?
Right.
But I've recently learned that they moved him to a bed way earlier, because he, like, refused to go to sleep in a crib. So I was probably 3 or 4. Just a pair of lights that appeared kind of at the end of my bed and started asking me very mundane questions, like, who are you, why are you here, you know, where is here, just like really strange questions like that.
Weird.
Yeah. And I wasn't afraid of it at all. I was just more curious, like, I kind of wanted to play with them, and I'm like, I'll answer these questions, just play along with it, you know. And then it wasn't until I said, like, this is my room, like, I live here, this is where I live, and then they kind of just, like, floated out toward the window, like, I had declared ownership over the space, so they just left, and I was really bummed out about it. So,
and they never came back?
No, I mean, the story gets way weirder from there. I guess we're doing a deep dive right into the weird, if you want to hear the weird part after that. Because I followed them, basically. It was I could see myself from outside my body, like, slumping back onto the pillow and falling asleep, and I went out the window after him.
Oh, wow.
And what I ended up seeing was, like, balloons and a McDonald's in the center of my hometown. And then when I woke up in the morning, it was like I kind of assumed it was all a dream.
Yeah.
Or at least that's probably what I was told. I probably told my parents about it, and they said I was dreaming, and I went several years thinking it was a dream, because there was no McDonald's in the center of my hometown. And around the time of one of my birthdays, they opened a McDonald's there, and my mother had a birthday party for myself and my brother there. And they were throwing all these balloons. And that was just kind of what made me think, like, okay, even if that all was a dream, it's like here I am in a McDonald's that didn't exist before, surrounded by birthday balloons. So,
yeah,
so
like,
that was,
even
that
if
was
it was a dream.
Very, Right.
It could have been like a precognitive dream.
Right. Yeah.
Wow,
at the very
that's
least,
weird.
That, yeah. So having that as like probably one of my earliest memories and having that happen later, I think that just kind of always made me really look out for the weird stuff, you know, like not discount anything offhand and accept virtually all possibilities, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. Yeah, that's interesting. What's interesting, too, is, like, they're asking you questions that, like, that you should have been asking. Like, who are you? Why are you here? Where is... Like, those are the things you should have been asking them, but they're asking you. It's very, it's like
well,
a mind...
It's
like, weird.
It's occurred to me over time that those are the kind of questions a ghost hunter asks. Right?
Yeah.
So what if I was the ghost? And the ghost hunters have yet to even explore that location. So the ghostly, I would be appearing as a time slip kind of ghost sometime in the future, and some future ghost hunters are asking those questions, talking to me back in 1980, whatever. It's like a temporal rift or something like that.
That's an interesting observation, yeah. Yeah.
Right? It's a real weird
yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
like
yeah. Now you've really, yeah. now you've really gotten in my head. Yeah.
Yeah, I really threw you away, of course, right at the beginning of the show. So.
Yeah, that's wild. Well, it is. Yeah, you do. I have kind of heard that sort of pondered in a way where it's like, yeah, you wonder. We're the ghosts for future ghost hunters, right? So. Who knows? Who knows? Yeah, that's very weird.
Right.
Now, one of the things that we talked actually last night because I was kind of going over the notes with you a little bit, sort of different stuff to talk about. And one of the things that has become sort of, I guess, one of your wheelhouse topics, let's say, is Elvis and Elvis weirdness, which I love because long-time listeners know we explored the Elvis death hoax. I love death hoaxes, period. And the Elvis death hoax is like the big daddy of death hoaxes. And so we did a whole show, as you know, with Mickey. I forget his last name. I don't have it in front of me off the top of my head. But he's like the Elvis. He's like the last man standing of the Elvis death hoax community, if you will. And I loved that episode. So what interests you in Elvis? Because it's weird, because I never got – I'm not really an Elvis fan. I never got into Elvis at all. He's an icon. People, like, absolutely love him and stuff. But so what drew your fascination and interest into Elvis?
Well, that's one of the reasons. I mean, he is iconic. And Elvis is something that's larger than the person, you know, that he actually was. The real life historical Elvis Aaron Presley is different from, you know, this kind of cultural manifestation that we call Elvis, you know. It's more of more of a pop culture egregore in a way. I was brought up on the oldies, even though, you know, I'm pushing 40 now, but when I was a kid, I listened to the oldies station with my dad, and I can tell you, I was always more of a Beatles kind of guy than an Elvis guy, but I did like Elvis, and I think what drew me to it more was, like, the Weekly World News and the tabloids when I was a kid, like, National Enquirer, too, because it was just, like, there was always, like, an Elvis sighting, and like, the TV specials that were on, and it just seemed so hokey and so ridiculous that, and that's one of the things that thrills me about all these weird fields where other people might say, like, oh, you're cheapening the whole thing, or you're making us all look bad by entertaining these ideas. And I'm like, no, let's entertain them. They're fun. You know, it's very fun. So I always got a kick out of it when I was younger. And then actually looking into it, it's like, it's a pretty deep rabbit hole. And, I have to say, like, I can't really get on board with most of the death hoax stuff, but there's really interesting stuff in there. And the more I pulled on it, the more I was finding, like, because there's so much literature on it, too. Like, there's so many different directions to go in. And I had approached Adam Thane on Conspiranormal about doing a show, and I hoped to make it more of, like, a lighthearted roundtable type affair. But nobody else seemed to want to bite on that, so I ended up doing almost, like, 2 hours of Elvis material myself. So I dove headfirst into it. And, I found everything from theories about Elvis being an alien to Elvis being channeled by the likes of Hans Holzer, and up to and including, like, Elvis never actually died, you know?
Yeah.
So, it was a fun subject, and it's like I kind of use Elvis as a, I don't know, like as a totem in a way.
Well, the Elvis death hoax is, we're kind of similar in a way, because it's like me with my interest in, like, the flat earth. It's like, it's very kind of maddening in a way, because if you tell people you're interested in it, they immediately think you believe in it. And it's like, I always have to, anytime I talk about the flat earth, I always have to, like, start with, like, the caveats. Like, look, I don't believe in this shit, but it's an interesting, it's a whole nother fucking world. And it's an interesting, there are people that do, and it's a whole community. And like you said, with the Elvis thing, it's like there's reams and reams of, like, literature of people who have written about this stuff. So to me, that's the fascinating part about it. But as soon as you kind of bring it up, people, like, roll their eyes, and they're like, oh, you know, why are you even talking about this? It's like, it's interesting, and it's fun, and it's weird.
Exactly. But isn't that the crux of all of the different weird phenomena that we look into? Because, I mean, your average Joe is going to be like, flying saucers. Like, who cares? Why do you bother reading a book about flying saucers? You read a whole book about it? Like, I mean, I got a whole library full of books about it, and people will get blown away by the fact that you're even entertaining the idea to begin with, you know? It's coming around. It's changing now, but I don't really see a line of demarcation. I think exploring the cosmology that other people live in is interesting anyway. I'm more interested in people and interested in what they believe. And, trying to at least meet them halfway. And then I applaud you for having, like, Mark Sargent on your show and talking about the flat earth. Because, most people wouldn't do that, or they would just make fun of it, you know. And you've actually gone to the conference and had a wild time with the flat earth, you know. And it's all about just, you know, that kind of, the handshakes, meeting them halfway and just kind of understanding where they're coming from and meeting them as other human beings, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, one of my favorite stories to tell about that event kind of ties back to what you were saying was, I was sort of trying to get into their heads about why they believe this stuff, and, like, I would ask them about other topics, and, like, any of the flat earthers I asked about, like, UFOs, and, you know, because I believe in UFOs sort of as a general idea, right? Like, I don't know what they are, but, like, you know, I have an interest in UFOs, and I think that, for lack of a better term, like, well, we all know UFO is just a concept, unidentified flying object, right? So, but like, essentially, the flat earthers just fucking laughed in my face. Like, literally laughed in my face, like a couple of them, where they're like, you have an interest in that stuff? What are you fucking, you're the crazy one. And it was just sort of like, you could almost, like, pause and just sort of, like, spin the camera around over my head, like, where it was just like, whoa, hold on a minute. I'm the fucking kook at the fucking Flat Earth Conference. And it just sort of changed my perspective in a big way, where it was like, all right, we're all fucking kooks here. And that's kind of essentially how I ended up getting along with a lot of them, where they're like, oh, you believe in a lot of kooky shit too, so you're all right by us, even if you don't believe in what we believe.
Right. And, I mean, when you have that realization, it's really pretty freeing, right? If you're not so hung up on being taken seriously, like, I have a deep fear of being taken seriously. I don't want anybody taking me too seriously because it is. It's all kooky shit. And if you recognize your own kookiness, then it's a lot harder to judge other people for their kookiness.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, we're all kooks in somebody's cosmology. So
Exactly. And then they trust you, and, you know, you can really kind of find a, like you were saying, like a middle ground and connect, you know, and connect with them and shit. They trust you enough to open up a little bit. So what you were telling me about this book, the Elvis, what is the Elvis UFO connection? I remember you saying, like, you were trying to get your hands on this book, but it was, like, super rare, and then you finally found it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it didn't do too many printings. So I ended up finding, like, a reprint version, which was really pretty crappy, because I still paid a lot of money for it, more than I care to admit. But, and you know, John Tenney offered to send me an extra copy that he had, because, of course, he has an extra copy. But it was kind of like a time constraint, you know. I was like, I got to do this show in, like, 2 weeks, you know. I don't know if I'll get it in time. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really odd book. And as far as, like, evidence goes towards Elvis having any connection with UFOs, all of it is very, very sparse. A lot of the book spends its time being just ufology 101 for the 80s. But it's still a pretty entertaining read. Yeah, I mean, they cover things like the Pascagoula case and some of the Bud Hopkins cases, and it's very heavily based on hypnosis and abduction encounters. But I mean, just the fact that there's a book that exists called The Elvis UFO Connection, and it has kind of an Adamski-style saucer on the cover, that was a book, like, I definitely needed to have in my library. So, yeah, I mean, there was one Elvis UFO sighting in the book that was recounted by Sonny West, who was one of his, like, one of the Memphis Mafia guys that was always around him. So he tells a story, and you can actually find clips on YouTube of him telling the story about Elvis seeing a flying saucer go by outside. And then he, like, runs off, and then they have to go find him. And I guess they ended up finding him, like, farther away than he should have been. So, like, the implication was that he got picked up by a flying saucer, you know, and then dropped off, like, down the street. But yeah, I mean, that was my main interest with that show, the UFO connection part of it. But I ended up going down all the other avenues as well, while I was struggling to find a copy of that book. So, there was also a bit in there about a mysterious blue light over his house in Tupelo, where he was born.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. And another bit about how Elvis's father, Jesse, may have been, oh, wait, no, not Jesse, that was his brother. So what was his name? Now I'm forgetting it. Well, he talked
you
about
just say Elvis's dad.
Elvis's dad, Vernon Presley, Vernon.
There you go.
Yeah, he, I guess, recounted at some point that he was under something else's control the night Elvis was conceived. So
the night Elvis was conceived.
Right.
Oh, weird.
Which means he must have told Elvis this at some point. Which had to have been psychologically damaging. I don't know about anybody else, but I know nothing about the night I was conceived, and I'm perfectly happy with that.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that either, or the night I was conceived, nor the night you were conceived, so, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Nor do I even really know what day that was. You know, I could probably do the math, but I don't care. So
yeah,
it's just bizarre that there's this account of Vernon being just, like, lifted up and down. I don't know. Just
oh,
really
weird.
Story.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, oh, God.
Yeah, so it goes pretty
deep. Now, yeah, damn. Well, what's interesting, saying the other night, the Elvis death hoax kind of, like, makes me yearn for to be around during that time, because as Mickey was saying when he was on the show, it's like there were these zines and shit. I guess I just I don't know what you'd call it, but, like, nostalgic for an era that I missed. Which was, like, that zine era. I really wish I had been kind of around back then to experience that. Because it's not the same as the internet. It's like a whole different kind of, I don't know, it's just like the information was almost like more precious in a way, because you had to wait for it to come in the fucking mail and shit, and it was like all artisanal almost. You know, it was like handcrafted paranoia shit, paranormal shit, conspiracy
right.
stuff.
Yeah. This is something that's been on my mind a lot lately, because I'm a big fan of, like, the old flying saucer zines and stuff like that, and it's mind-blowing to me to think, like, Timothy Green Beckley was creating these on his own when he was, like, a teenager in the 60s. Like,
yeah.
And mailing them out all over the place. And I'd like to see some of that come back. Like, I've been trying to – I've talked to a few people here and there about the potential of maybe – doing some kind of zine or newsletter that's like a physical thing that can be mailed out. And Liminal Earth, who I help out with, does a little bit of that. If you're part of the club, they send out periodic little zine type things. But yeah, I mean, I think that's such a fascinating world that I also missed out on, you know? So,
yeah.
I know Go Rightly's got, like, a big archive of those, doesn't he? He probably has some of those Elvis ones.
He may. I have to ask him about the Elvis ones, but, yeah, he was him and Greg Bishop and I don't know too many other people. Personally, I don't know too many other people who were sort of, like, Ken Thomas. They were all kind of, like, in that zine scene. You know, before the internet came along and shit. But, yeah, it's definitely yeah. – talking to you right now, yeah, the thought does come to my mind. Was like, it would be really cool to launch, like, a zine in 2022. But who knows, you know, that the idea sounds good to you. Until you got to mail out, like, 4 dozen zines, and it turns out it costs, like, fucking, you know, shitload of money to mail shit nowadays. Who knows? I don't know how much it costs to mail, how you even mail, you know, how you do that. So, but it would be a cool thing to do, I think.
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking about it. I mean, I'm looking into print-on-demand services and stuff like that because I'm very serious about making it happen. So, if any listeners want to collaborate on that, come find me on Twitter. So, I know.
There you go. Yeah, well, you and I will have to talk off the air about that because, yeah, I would be happy to contribute to a hard copy zine. That would be cool as hell.
Right.
Yeah, it would be neat to have that kind of retroness to it, too.
No, absolutely.
Because I remember, like, as a kid, I don't even know what the mag... I want to say maybe it was Paranoia magazine, but, like, even when I was a kid, like, I would go to Tower Records. You remember Tower Records?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And they had, like, a whole wall of magazines. But, like, there was only, like, 2 or 3... You know, there was, like, UFO magazine and Paranoia magazine. It was not like there was, you know, there was, like, one tiny little section was, like, the magazine, like, the weird magazines part. And it was always, like, just 1, 2, or 3 magazines or something like that. So,
right.
But they were always, like, wicked fucking wild. I know what you mean about the Weekly World News. I wonder if that's kind of what got me into it, because I was super, I loved fucking Weekly World News. So, I wonder how many people that newspaper and magazine or whatever, like, inadvertently got, like, mixed up in this shit just through the sheer fact that it was, like, at every newspaper, you know, every grocery checkout, like, in the
yeah.
country.
How many kids that were tugging on their moms and saying, could you buy me this?
Yeah.
You know, like, that ended up taking it seriously later. Because, I mean, I was already seriously interested in a lot of these subjects. And the Weekly World News was just like candy because I
yeah.
never took what was in it seriously, but it was fun. You know, Bat Boy was great. You know, that stuff was amazing. And I'm glad it's still around. You know, they're kind of making a comeback now. And I don't know if anybody from Weekly World News is listening. I'd love to write for you. So just hit me up. It's one of my lifelong dreams is having a Weekly World News byline on my resume.
Yeah, I wonder, I don't know what's going on with Weekly World News, because I know its ownership has changed hands a couple times, like, in the last few years, so I don't know what, They have a Twitter account, I know that, but other than that, I don't ever really see them doing anything other than merchandising Bat Boy and shit. God bless them.
No, they are, yeah, but they're trying to bring it back in print, too, and I think that's in the works. Like, that's actually going to happen. So
that would be awesome.
There should be a print version available again. That was my understanding of it. So
I knew a guy that wrote for Weekly World News. I knew tangentially, but he's since passed away. I never got really a chance to talk to him about Weekly World News. It was sort of something I heard later. It was like, oh, shit, that guy wrote for Weekly World News? That's fucking crazy.
yeah, because they didn't really give people bylines. They all had, like, these weird pseudonyms and stuff, where it was just, like, Weekly World News staff, you know? So even if it was anonymous, I'd still love to just write for him, you know? I think it would be great.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you could craft, like, a whole character. Like, Ed Anger was one of them. Ed Anger was, like, one of the alleged writers for Weekly World
yeah,
News.
Right. And Dottie. Ask Dottie.
Yes, Dottie. Yeah, wasn't she, like, a psychic or something like that?
No, Dottie was, like, the Ann Landers of Weekly World News.
Okay.
Only she was
all
really
right.
mean to everybody that asked her for advice. And there was
yeah,
a psychic.
Yeah, so
I think
absurd.
Sabrina or Selena, something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it was like the Mad Magazine
memory
of paranormal. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. The guy that came up with the design, that boy actually died like a year or two ago.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name now, but man, he was an interesting character. Reading about his life. So it just seemed like they were just a tight crew. And I guess actually there's also a documentary. I don't know if it's out yet or if it came out already, but it's a documentary about how like the Weekly World News started. So I got to track that down because I'd love to watch it. But
yeah.
But yeah, it's a big inspiration for me. And like I said, with the Elvis stuff, it's kind of one of those things that toes the line between just complete and utter absurdity and some real subjects, you know, so it kind
yeah.
of blurs those lines and it's good for a laugh, but it also, in a way, it also kind of makes you think, you know, I mean,
yeah, well,
Bat Boy was
yeah,
found
exactly,
in a West Virginia canyon.
Where
Bat
else
Boy
would you even see any coverage about any weird shit? So it was like, that was the only place you ever really saw. I remember it was always like Atlantis. It was always like shit about Atlantis and like Bigfoot. It was awesome.
Bigfoot's love slave. That was a classic.
That was the other part that like it was always like there was always sort of like one or two in each issue. Sort of like one or two slightly like titillating. Sexual part of it. You know what I mean? Where it was like, there was always some little dirty, that sort of, there's always like one or two stories that like took a dirty turn. They were always like, this guy was kept as a sex slave by Bigfoot for like 6 months and shit. It was like, what the fuck? What is this? This
yeah.
is crazy.
Yeah.
Oh
really
man.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Weekly World News, dude. Yeah, I know Aaron Gullius did a good, he did a show on Weekly World News, Saucer Life episode, so yeah, those I haven't heard it in a long time. From what I remember, like, it, I don't know necessarily Weekly World News, I think maybe at the beginning, definitely National Enquirer was like, they were kind of serious at first, like, they covered this shit, like, with some level of seriousness at first, and then they kind of went really wacky and weird and shit, especially Weekly World News.
Yeah, I mean, they covered, like, the Cash Landrum incident and did it pretty faithfully. They got the facts for the most part right, you know? I think, was it Leo Sprinkle was in the magazine sometimes? Like, that was the guy they were talking to. So they had legit people in there telling, you know, factual accounts of stories that allegedly happened, you know? wasn't made up whole cloth or anything like that. So,
yeah, that's the big contention with the Travis Walton story that like they, you know, they ended up getting like $5,000 or something from National Enquirer for having like the best UFO story of the year or something like that. So it was there was certainly certainly coverage of, you know, quote unquote real events, or at least actual events. I don't know if we don't know if they're real or not, but actual things that happened, not just love Bigfoot love slaves and shit.
Yeah, it's hard to define reality in those terms, but what I always liked was the idea that there was real stuff that was hidden in the Weekly World News, but they put all the other fake stuff around it so nobody would know.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the other thing. Yeah, they always sort of like tied it into current events too, where it was always like the fucking alien, the aliens, whoever was like the predominant important public figure of the day, like the aliens were meeting with, and it was always like this. So you could go by like, I bet you could go through the Weekly World News archive and find like the alien meeting with like every president throughout the course of the publication of the magazine. Like the aliens were constantly fucking constantly meeting with the president and shit.
Yeah, I mean, there's a recurring character alien that always does. I think he actually has a name in the article, so he's a recurring character. But I think he had an affair with Hillary Clinton once years ago.
Yes. Yeah.
An article about that.
Yep. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that got all prurient and shit. Weekly World News. Good times, man. Good times, yeah. I'd like to get my hands on the final edition. I should look. I think, ironically enough, I think I want to say, like, if you look it up, like, on the cover of the final Weekly World News, it was like, buy this now before it ends up on eBay. And it's like, now, that was probably like 15, 20 years ago. Now it's like, if I want to get a copy of the final Weekly World News, it is on eBay. That's probably it was very prescient of them to fucking put that on the cover, because that's pretty much the only place you can get it now.
Oh, I still have a copy of the second appearance of Batboy. Child Escapes. I have a copy of that one. So.
Yeah, it was Batboy. That was like, they must have like flipped out when they ran that. Like, they must have just been like, "Holy shit, we've got a hit on our hands!" Like, we sold more issues than we have all year with this fucking Batboy thing. And then it was like Batboy everything. It was fucking Batboy was all in the on the cover like every 6 weeks at least. Holy shit!
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Now
he's. All right, go ahead. he was like a mascot for them, basically, after a point, you know? Because it's a completely creation of theirs. Like, they didn't make up Bigfoot or aliens, but that boy was very specifically Weekly World News. So it worked out for them.
Yeah, and then they ended up, like, I think they ended up making there was a Bat Boy musical and shit. It was, like, that big a... big a thing.
Right.
So it was pretty crazy. Batboy. Oh, man. Yeah, I think now you can get, like, Batboy shirts and all kinds, like, mugs and all kinds of shit. So, God bless. Yep. I imagine whoever came up with Batboy probably didn't see, like, he probably didn't see a dime of that shit. He was just like, he's like one of those comic book writers or something. It's like, dude, you came up with... As crazy as it sounds, like, this guy came up with an iconic character in the form of Batboy, and it's like, like, holy shit, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, he was actually a graphic designer. I think he was supposed to be making just, like, an alien, and then he ended up kind of turning it into a Batboy kind of character, and they built the character around the graphic he came up with. So it was kind of a group effort. but yeah, like I said, that guy died like 2-3 years ago. So if I knew we were going to talk about him, I would have looked it up again. But he was a very interesting character.
Yeah, I'm on. All right. Well, that sounds. Yeah. Zach Copley sent me the. Yeah, if you go to weeklyworldnews.com, it's still – people can get kind of a feel for what it was like because they do have – my only complaint about the new Weekly World News is that it's like a little – it just goes a little too far over – I don't know. It's like the old days when I remember seeing it was like it was just on the line of like absurd. Where it was, like, just enough to kind of make you kind of go, wait a minute, you know? But now they've really leaned into the absurd to the point where it's, like, you know, it's like, oh, come on, dude. What, really? Like, I'm looking at one here. It's like Kangaroos Awakens, and it's like they're pretending like some kangaroo Godzilla thing is, like, running around Australia. And it's like, just, you know, just try to make it, like, what's that?
That's what I'm saying. They hire me on as a writer. They won't have that problem. You know, I know how to toe that line.
Yeah.
I think they've been
reading
my mind anyway. I think they've been stealing my thoughts anyway, the Weekly World News. I've had a couple of occasions recently where I've made a joke about something, and I can actually document this, and then they've come up with it as a story like a week or two later. I'm psychically intuiting a story that they're pitching in a writer's room, or they're stealing my thoughts and making stories out of them. So,
who knows? They could be. Yeah.
But,
yeah, they have one here. Like this is kind of what I'm talking about. They have one here. That's good. Like abominable beach man, hairless Hawaiian giant terrorizes local fishermen. That's kind of right where you want it. Where it's
right.
Where it's like we're getting reports. Here's a drawing of this thing. But you're like, is that true? Like that's kind of the ones I like the most. Where you're like, as a kid, now it's like, all right, that's bullshit. but as a kid, you're like, I wonder if that's true. I wonder if people, I wonder if if the small family of fishermen in Hawaii have really encountered some fucking creature down there. And it's like, that's crazy. that's the kind of shit I like.
Right.
Oh man. Now on you got a blog, so you do a little bit of writing on this blog. It's apstrange.com, right?
Yep.
All right. And your name on Twitter, I didn't plug it here, but it's I worry about my dear listeners because I don't know if I could do this right. So it's A Prodigiosis. So APRODIGIOSUS. So just punch in AP Strange, folks, and you'll be able to find it. So you got a blog post on Fortean frogs, which I found really interesting. What I like about you, Matt, is you have it's kind of a throwback in a way to, and I mentioned this at the end of last week's episode too. It's like if I could take this little chunk that we've done this month since we had Zelia Edgar on, it's like. This whole sort of last few episodes has been sort of a celebration of sort of retro weird in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about you. You're into the retro weird as well. So it's you can kind of fit that. So what are you writing about on the blog with regards to Fortean frogs?
Okay, well, so that one was the more recent one, but it was actually – I had actually started writing that maybe 4 years ago, and my computer crashed.
Oh, wow.
And I just, like, got disgusted and left it alone. And I decided to revisit the idea and just pare it down and be a little bit more philosophical and surface level with it. But it's just basically the idea that, like, in addition to all the weird stuff I really love, like, I love comedy. I love cartoons. And I think that Fortiana and High Strangeness, that's one of the things everybody loves. Like, Zelia had plenty of great, great High Strangeness stories that she talked about when she was on the show. And there are those among us that really just want that. We want the highly strange stuff.
Right, yes, me too.
And when it appears, sometimes it's like it's so absurd, like that nobody would want to take it seriously. But if you do take it seriously, I think that there's little lessons to be learned there. So I always thought of tune Some Froggy Evening with Michigan J. Frog, the dancing and singing frog that was found in the time capsule, to be like a really great metaphor for dealing with high strangeness. Because you have a guy that, you know, when he finds something anomalous and weird, he's surprised by it, but his first thought is like, let's make a buck off this, you know? How can I exploit this and make money? And, you know, we see plenty of that in various fields. It's like I always like to joke with you, a lot of people are after those big UFO dollars.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm still waiting for my big UFO dollars to come pouring in. But yeah, and then he goes through the whole range of emotion with it, up to and including, you know, being locked away in a nut house, you know. So I really just kind of wanted to outline that. And, of course, you know, frogs have a pretty prominent place in Floriana anyway. Like, when you go back to Charles Fort, he documented cases of frogs raining down out of the sky, as well as, you know, plenty of other things, fish, blood, all kinds of stuff. I get into a few examples in that post, but moreover, it was more kind of a philosophical take on what it means to encounter high strangeness and how best you can deal with it. And I think, you know, having a sense of humor about these subjects certainly helps in most cases.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's, as you know me well, so you know that's kind of my that's my raison d'etre. So I don't take any of this shit seriously. You know, so it's and most of my friends, like my closest friends, so you know, we all kind of laugh about it. So it's like the people that's kind of, I guess I wouldn't even criticize people. It's more like it just makes me sad. Like, it makes me, like, disappointed. Like, the people that take it so seriously, that have no sense of humor about it, that are like, this is serious. This is serious. Why are you laughing about it? Why are you making a joke about it? Why, you know, why are you celebrating the absurdity about it? This is serious business. It's like, oh, no, dude, you don't get it. Like, you don't get it at all. You think I don't get it, but you're the one who doesn't get it, because this is fucking absurd weirdness. It's like weird. It's fucking weird. Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, any one of like the many myriad paths you can go down with any of these subjects is going to only hurt you if you think you're going to take it very seriously and have very firm parameters of what you believe and what you don't. You know, I think it's you know, that way lies madness. So you can beat madness to the punch by being a little bit silly, kooky, and having a sense of humor about it ahead of time before it gets to you. You know, because I mean, that's really, I think you and I come from much the same places. When you see people taking it so seriously and being so invested, you really just kind of want to, like, lessen that punch when it comes. like, okay, you're looking forward to this report from the government. We just want to let you know right now nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to be very different afterward, after that report comes out. As long as you know, no, dude, shut the fuck up. You know, like, you're stopping it from happening by saying that, you know. It's almost like, you're against the cause, like, you're a hater, you know. I've gotten all of this online before, and I'm like, oh, I'm just trying to save you some heartbreak, my friend. A lot of us have been there before, you know. So
it's interesting, you and I, we swim in a lot of the same circles on Twitter and shit, and it's very we've kind of observed a lot of the same trends and behavior and shit. There's certainly what fascinates me. I wish someone would do like a survey on it, would I would because it just seems like there's this whole new generation of well, I'll call them UAP buffs who got into this after that New York Times article, and that, like, I've seen them say it, where it's like, I wasn't really into this until I read that New York Times article. It's so, it was not really, for all the faults in that article, and there are, they are legion, you know, that really was sort of this weird watershed thing that got a lot of people hooked on this. I'm still really surprised by that. You know, it was a really weird kind of turn of events. Maybe as we come up on the 5th anniversary in December, there'll be some reflection on that. But, yeah. And those right. are the people who, like, I see myself in them. Because when I got into this in 2003, I got interested in it. In 2005, I started becoming active in the field. You know, I was hearing, I kind of had that mindset. I had that kind of mindset where it was like, this is the most important story in the history of the world, and, you know, we need to take this seriously and shit. And as you get older and you're in this longer and shit, it's like, is it really the most important story in the history of the world? Because I've been following this story for 20 years. And nothing's happened. It's like, what kind of fucking, how is this the biggest story in the history of the world if it hasn't changed in 20 years? You know, like, yeah, come on, dude.
I remember seeing somebody online and it just kind of like, it tickled me, but it also kind of broke my heart a little bit at the same time because he was like, I don't know how you guys do it. I've been way into this stuff all the time for a year now. And I'm so sick of, like, things not turning out the way they say it's going to. It's like a year. You better it 1 year. Okay. Well, that explains a lot, you know. Yeah, prepare for more of the same. Or just dive in and let's soak up the weirdness, you know. Like, just enjoy it. You don't have to be a UAP disclosure warrior, you know. And that's the part that worries me is when you get into the warrior aspect of it, the warrior mentality. And it is there. As much as a lot of people try to deny it, there's definitely a thread of people that are very aggressive about the truth coming out, you know? And I think that teeters on very dangerous territory. I think language is
absolutely.
Very important. The words you choose to use and how you characterize your ideology are, tantamount to being complicit in acts of violence if you're talking using violent language, you know. So
yeah,
I don't
agree with
that.
Yeah,
those are the only people I've been very against, you know. But
I
get myself in trouble.
I totally. Well, I'll give you credit. You take it to some of these folks on there. So I don't have the stomach for online fighting, really. So I don't do it. But yeah, it's. I totally agree with you. It's there's a militancy that I'd never seen that wasn't around before, which is another interesting sort of thing.
Right, because it's the antithesis of what we grew up with, right? You know. Like, for our age group, it was that we can't trust the government. We need to force them to release these documents or admit this or admit that. And even if they do, they're probably lying, right? And now the government insiders and ex-spooks are the good guys that always tell the truth to these people.
Right.
And we have to trust them
right.
because they're from the government.
Topsy-turvy. Yeah, that's what a lot of us old timers, and I think, like, yeah, you're an old timer too at this point. It's like, yeah, it's that's the weirdest part where it was like, no, the we're against the government. What are you guys talking about? But what troubles me in a lot of ways is like, and I'm sure there were people who got like super pissed off back in the day and shit. But it was like there's more of a militancy, too, against not the quote-unquote, like, non-believer or the debunker or the skeptic. And it's like somebody on Twitter, I don't want to get into it, but somebody on Twitter posted, like, it was violent rhetoric toward debunkers and shit. And it was like, the debunkers are, they're your best, like, if they're coming at it with a, on an honest level, they're your allies, dude. Like, they're trying to help you separate the wheat from the chaff and shit. Like, Mick West is, like, I don't give a fuck, the people who hate Mick West, it's like, Mick West is the best fucking person, is probably one of the best people in ufology. Like, he's helping you, keeping you from wasting your fucking time on shit that isn't real. Like,
right.
Like, that should, he should be celebrated. Like, that's what the UFO research is supposed to be. Like, okay, what is this thing? Let's figure it out. Is it this or that? Not just, oh, we don't know what it is, and don't try and figure it out.
Right. I mean, when you want somebody that has some expertise analyzing photos or video, doing that kind of stuff, you know, because I don't know what I'm looking at, you know.
Exactly.
I have to defer to somebody else's judgment. So, yeah, I mean, like, that's the whole thing. It's not even skeptics versus believers at this point. It's you know, people with a very, very set in cognitive bias against everybody that's not on their team, you know.
Yeah, it's very tribal.
It's very tribal, and they have an inflated sense of their own importance too, which is really funny to me, because it's maybe,
oh yeah,
can't be that many people. It's like a drop in the bucket of the American population, or world population for that matter. And it's like they act like they're a force to be reckoned with. So.
Right. Yeah. I read somewhere that, like, something like fucking it, for those of us who are on Twitter, it seems like it's the whole world, but it's like, I read somewhere that it's like 10% of Americans are on Twitter or something like that. And then if you boil it down to like UFO Twitter, it's not even 1% of Americans. It's like a fraction
right.
of that. It's like 2,000 people. It's like maybe at
yeah.
most.
Right.
So, but
at least
but,
100 of
but
them
if you
bots or alternate accounts, so.
Yeah. But if you're, that's why I try. If I was going to advise anyone, and I almost guarantee that like there's nobody from who would consider themselves a part of UFO Twitter listening, because I've thrown elbows at that community on here plenty of times. But it'd be like, look at. My advice would be, like, you can follow – I would suggest people just follow it, but do not, like, when you come to the point where you feel like you're a part of that community, stop and get the fuck out. Like, stop
yeah.
and pull back. Because as soon as you're
right.
as soon as you consider yourself a member of a community in this weirdness, you know, you got to kind of – at least you got to make – you know, check yourself. And make sure you're
right.
not getting in too deep.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why I like, you know, what you referred to earlier and what I often refer to as weird Twitter, because it's not all that well-defined. It's just whoever's on Twitter that's into weird stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So there's no agenda there. It's just a bunch of us friggin' weirdos hanging out on there posting weird stuff all day. So.
Yeah, swapping weird stories and shit. Yeah, that's like different.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, and it goes to, like you were saying, there's like an inflated sense of self or something with some of these communities where it's like, also, people, I get, maybe some of them realize this, but it's like, look, if UFO Twitter's a big thing, sure, right? But it's like, go fucking try, like, dip a toe into fucking, I don't know, the Green Bay Packers Twitter or shit, fucking, like, QAnon or any, that's like those are huge communities, you know? So it's all these
right.
bubbles. It's all these bubbles, and the UFO Twitter bubble is not very big.
Right. I am worried about the overlap, though, because, I mean, you mentioned QAnon, and I was going to say earlier, where you have that kind of ideological flip-flop in UFO Twitter and disclosure, where now we're supposed to trust people because they work for the government, where before we used to not trust people that worked for the government.
Right.
But conspiracy theory has gone the same way, you know, where all the stuff that Bill Cooper, who is, you know, probably one of the biggest figures in my lifetime as like a terrible influence on conspiracy theory, all the stuff he was warning people about, these people want it to happen now, you know. You're
yeah.
talking about turning places into concentration camps, and the government's going to corral us in there because they want to take away our liberties. And QAnon these days is like, we need to build concentration camps and throw all these people in there. Like, they want
yeah.
it.
It's
a flip-flop, you know?
Scary.
It's scary. It's really scary. And that's when I started getting really worried, is like seeing all these old recycled ideas put into the minds of people that have really no deductive reasoning at all, and just putting it all together and making it sound like it's a good thing for them. All the stuff that the tinfoil hat set used to be worried about now is a good thing to the same kinds of fringe minds of today.
Yeah.
So it's bizarre, really bizarre stuff, and scary.
Yeah, it definitely is scary, because, yeah, when I was, not to get too deep into politics, but yeah, when I was growing up, it was like people disagreed about ideas, but there was never any sense of like, if we just wiped out the other side, like they're demons and evil and shit. It was never like the other side's evil. It was just like, they're fucking wrong. They're just wrong
right.
about how best to handle, you know, income tax or immigration or whatever. Now it's like, you fucking hate America and we need to round you up. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Shit, this
yeah,
is scary.
It is scary. And then people want to act like you're exaggerating when you compare it to 1930s Germany. But, like, but that's what they were doing back then. And people just said, well, maybe it'll blow over, you know. So,
yeah.
I don't know. We probably
yeah,
shouldn't
we'll move
too
just,
deep down the politics.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we're going to move into something
well,
else before.
Want to talk about Phantom Clowns? We haven't talked about clowns in a long time.
We haven't talked about clowns. You're a clown aficionado like me. So, yeah, and I don't think we've ever – I think Lauren and I have talked about – of course, Lauren and I have talked about clowns. Lauren, he's like the keeper of the clowns. What?
Right.
What,
he's
you,
got the
so
whole
you,
clown
you,
scale.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
The clown encounter scale.
The
like
clown
trying to
scale.
Catch the closing. Right, yeah.
Well, what do you think? Yeah. I'm disappointed with the clowns because I
know.
Well,
where the hell have they been?
I fucking, by the nature of my job, I look for clowns every day. I literally look for clowns every day to see if they're up to anything. And they haven't been up to shit in months, you know. And maybe a couple times a year they'll do something, clowns. But
right.
It's weird.
It is. It's totally weird because we had a whole clown watch going. We started a hashtag, like hashtag
yeah.
clown watch 2020. And we were finding them back then. But, yeah, they've been real quiet the last couple of years. So I don't know what that's all about. Maybe it's a good thing. I'm sure a lot of people are grateful for that. But
well, yeah,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe you and I just did too good a job being clown watch, you know, and they're intimidated and they don't want to come out anymore. I don't know.
Keeping an eye on the clowns. Well, the thing is, it changed – I think you'll agree. Like, it changed. I don't know. They used to be more, like, as when Lauren first kind of started talking about them, like, in the 80s and shit, when the first big wave happened, they were phantom clowns. They were, like, phantoms. They were, like, ghostly and sort of popped up and vanished and shit, and people saw them. And I have a friend, God rest his soul. He has passed away now. He had a tattoo of a fucking clown. With it, chomping on a cigar on his arm, and like he liked to spin a good yarn, let's put it that way, God bless him.
Yeah.
And so I never quite, and I think if I asked his brother, I'm sure it came up, but his brother, like, you know, his brother was like, no, that's a true story, but it's like, ah, I don't know. But he insisted, like, there's a reservoir in our town. They were at the reservoir when they were kids, and they were like, they go around the corner, and there was a fucking phantom clown. There was a clown, and he was chomping on a cigar. And it so traumatized him that he ended up getting a tattoo.
Wow. Yeah, because, I mean, well, you're not too far from where the sightings were. I mean, it was in the Boston, greater Boston area originally. That was the first sightings, so. But,
now
that's pretty compelling.
Yeah, I got to ask his brother about it next time I talk to him to see if he remembers the story at all. But, yeah, so that's my disappointment with the clowns, that they're not really doing anything. They're not being phantoms anymore. That's it. They're not being phantoms anymore. It's definitely moved more into, like, criminality. It's like more often than not, you get a clown story, it's connected to someone who did something. Like, we know who it was. It was some ne'er-do-well, and they fucking put on a clown mask and robbed a bank, or there was a great story at the end of the year about the guy who, like, drove the limo onto the airport in Vegas, who wanted to hijack a plane to fly to Area 51.
Oh,
he was
yeah.
doing it all in a clown mask. It was like,
that was
one of the greatest stories. Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, we don't want the clown to be too militant. Now, let me ask you about this, because I can speak to this for sure, because you and I went out there to check it out. America's Stonehenge. For the people who don't know what this is, I'll give you a thumbnail. It's a little bit kitschy. It's got a slight edge of kitschiness to it. It's kind of like, it's a stone rock, sort of like monument-y type place. It seems like giant rock ruins. There's it's sort of an apocryphal urban legend. I don't know how you'd describe it. Maybe you can flesh this out after I finish this ramble. But it's sort of like they make it out to be like this could be ancient and significant, and it is. It does seem to align with celestial stuff, which is why it's called America's Stonehenge. So there's a certain esoteric underpinning to this place. But at the same time, it's like this could also be, and we think maybe it was a colonial root cellar. So it's like, oh, maybe
right.
This isn't Druid. Maybe this is from some Puritan guy. But it's in Salem, New Hampshire. And anyone who's in the New England area or even outside there who wants to check out, you know, something strange, I would almost call it, they call it America's Stonehenge. I would almost call it like, it would be akin to like New England's Coral Castle. It's sort of like a weird site that people can check out. And Matt and I went and visited there on Labor Day, this past Labor Day. So, I mean, what's your take on it? I mean, I don't really have – I mean, I'm probably, like, more leaning on the root cellar part, but the celestial part kind of makes me think, okay, maybe there's more to this maybe there's more to it than I'm willing to give by just saying it's a root cellar. So I'm kind of like – I just see it as sort of like a weird, mysterious place in a way. But, I mean, what's your take on it? Was that the first time you've been to America's Stonehenge?
It was, which is very weird to me because I've been all over New England, and my family used to go camping every summer, and we'd go to different areas, and it seems like the kind of place that my folks would have brought me to. But I don't think I had ever been there until we went together. I mean, the impression I get is that it's probably a mix of indigenous people had built up some of it, and then later where it was used by settlers for other things and added on to. It's kind
that
of funny
sense.
That
yeah.
there is no like real archaeological study of it. Like they basically won't let them, to my understanding, like do a good survey of it. And, that's in the works maybe, but it's weird that we don't know more about it. And I think they kind of perpetuate the mystery to keep it like a mysterious site.
Yes.
But, you know, that makes it kind of, like you said, it's kind of that hokey roadside attraction kind of feel to it. They have, like, a gift shop and everything, and, like, a little room where you can watch the educational video on it. it's a cool place. I mean, the stone chamber, I thought, was the coolest thing in the whole place. Like that,
yeah,
like
that's,
you get
the,
some,
that's definitely yeah. That's the highlight of the whole place. Yeah, the stone chamber. And for people who don't get what that is, and the stone chamber is like a little, it's a chamber made of like giant slabs of stone. And the crazy part that Matt and I experienced when we went there is I have been to America's Stonehenge probably 5 or 6 times. Like anytime someone from outside the area comes to visit, it's always like, that's on the top of my list, you know, of places to take them. Because it's, to me, in a way, it's like the perfect esoteric attraction in a way. Because, like, you can take somebody to Salem, but it's like a Salem Mass, but it's like, it's like an overwhelming sense, like, this is too much. There's too much going on in Salem to really show someone, give someone the experience. But America's Stonehenge is like this serene, you know, the deep, in the rooted, esoteric sort of, like, weirdness to it. I lost my train of thought now. But America's Stonehenge is I like what you're saying, how it was probably built up.
Chamber.
Oh, the stone chamber. Oh, so we went. Yeah, right. Thank you so much. All right, so when we went, I have been there 4, 5, 6 times. There's a hole. This is hard for me to really explain. But there's a hole in the stone chamber wall that you can, like, shout out and look out into the outside thing. And I always was just like, that's really neat. And then when Matt and I went, now again, this is like the 5th time I've been there, I've never made this connection. Outside of the stone chamber is a huge stone slab that looks like a table, essentially. And they call it the altar. And the little hole where you can shout out from the chamber is down under the altar. So it's like,
right.
You have to imagine, somebody could be on the thing. Someone could be lying on this thing, on this tablet, essentially, this stone tablet. And if you were there, you would hear voices coming out from under the fucking tablet. And those were the people inside the chamber. So to me, yeah, that's, no matter who built it, it's so fucking cool. It is really cool. And the fact that I had never put that together blew me away. It was like, oh, shit, this is, you know, there's, no matter, every time you go, you find something new at that place. It's weird.
Yeah, it's all a matter of how you look at it. And what I didn't realize about it was how high an elevation it is. Because if you go beyond all that stuff and up the hill a little bit, there's, like, that big field, and you're just looking out over mountains.
Yeah.
In the surrounding area. So that would be an awesome place. I know we were talking about it that day, to, like, camp out. I don't know if they'd let you, but just to camp out and see if you see anything in the sky at night. And even if you didn't, I mean, it would be a cool place to camp, you know. But
yeah.
We got to spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens. What kind of radio show is this?